Hello and welcome to Sobre Mesa podcast. My name is Owen Gilmartin. My guest today, Christopher Evans, writes, "There really isn't another club like Athletic Bilbao in world football. They're unique, renowned for their philosophy of only fielding players from or who were formed in the Basque Country. They're a sporting representation of Bilbao and the Basque Country on the international stage. Although this footballing philosophy has unarguably been tweaked over time, its core aim, to promote local young talent and maintain the strong identity of the club and Basque culture, continues to be upheld. Athletic is a football club still rooted within its community." The quote is from his new book, Los Leones, the first English language history of Athletic Club Bilbao, which is out this month. It's a fascinating history looking back at the club's century-long history, as well as how their unique philosophy works today. As always, if you're a regular listener and are enjoying what you're hearing, please think about making a small financial contribution. We've nearly reached our yearly target, which will make us sustainable for this year, pay for our subscriptions, software, etc. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, please also consider leaving us a review or rating on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Okay, enjoy the interview. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Sobre Mesa podcast.
A good pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on, Owen.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I mean, I think it's sort of the perfect time to have this interview. You know, Athletic has just got to the final of the Copa del Rey. I mean, you were in Bilbao. You said you didn't actually get to see the match. You were arriving on the day, but it must have been an amazing atmosphere. You know, on the day, was it last Thursday, the match?
Yeah. So actually, I arrived with my family and. In Santander, so we had to quickly get across to Bilbao. It's about an hour, but we arrived at halftime, so I missed all three goals.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so yeah, you only saw the second half. Okay.
Well, we managed to get to a bar for the second half, and the atmosphere in Bilbao, as you would expect, was unbelievable, really. Yeah, and I think the fans are so excited now for, I think it's April the 6th, the final in Sevilla.
Exactly.
Amazing. But I didn't get to go to that game, unfortunately. So that was because it was all a last minute trip. But I don't think I would have got a ticket anyway, to be honest.
It would have been hard. You said you were at the Barcelona game on Sunday.
Yes. So I have to pick up the Athletic Club here. They gave me Skybox, these VIP tickets for family. So we were in the Prawn Sandwich Brigade. And we were there for the Barcelona, the match on the Sunday, which they interviewed me before the match as well. So that was great. It was a great experience. My two boys, you know, obviously, that was fantastic. Yeah.
I guess because they beat Barca in the quarterfinal of the cup. In a great game to go again. I mean, a bit like the semi in that sense. The Williams brothers, the key players there. If I remember rightly, it was 2-2 against Barca in the quarterfinal. Went to extra time, and both Williams brothers scored a goal in extra time to get to the semis. And then, of course, this in last Thursday, I have Sid Lowe's quote tweets here. His first tweet was like, "Williams crosses, William scores. Williams crosses, William very nearly scores. And then Williams crosses, Williams, I guess, junior scores, no?" So can you talk a little bit about, I mean, this is, I guess, part of what their story, you know, is sort of indicative of maybe what makes Athletic Bilbao such a unique club. You know, these two brothers, their family comes from Ghana. They come as refugees. I think his mother was pregnant with Iñaki when she had to scale the wall in Melilla, I think it was, no?
Yeah.
Not an easy task. I mean, I've been down there. I think it's in reality it's three walls you have to scale. But anyway, yeah. Tell us about their story.
Well, it's a fascinating story. I know it's quite well known, and I know that Sid Lowe absolutely loves the William brothers, in particular Iñaki.
Yeah.
Story is, they were refugees there, and they were leaving Accra in Ghana. The Williams brothers' parents, obviously, that is. If you watch it, there's a documentary on the Athletic website where Iñaki, who I think speaks brilliantly when you see him interviewed, and he seems like a really articulate and intelligent guy. So it says that his parents witnessed people literally falling on the wayside, dying on the road. His father was walking bare feet across the desert. And then, they had to, as you mentioned, they had to scale the wall in Melilla. and eventually found their way to Bilbao. But I think they had to, Iñaki mentioned that they had to say that they were from somewhere else because there was a, I think, Liberia, because there was a civil war going on, so they could get asylum. And anyway, they eventually ended up in Bilbao. Iñaki, they were looked after by a priest. That's who Iñaki was named after.
Okay.
And I think it was quite clear from a young age that Iñaki was a talented footballer. I think he made his debut at 19 or 20 for Athletic. But I mean, the story is, I think it hits home even more, maybe because Athletic, from people outside of Athletic, can often see them as being a bit of, I wouldn't say xenophobic, but a bit of a nationalist club, maybe. And so it's really that the first time that somebody, although Iñaki was obviously born within the Basque Country, it's the first time that they've had what we call outsiders, maybe, playing for the club. And I think it's so special, and they're so loved by Athletic fans.
And
like I said, they're both amazing.
Very exciting players. I mean, Nico, who's the younger, there had been speculation that he might leave, and there is that interesting relationship. I mean, Iñaki is nearly like a father figure to him, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think Iñaki, their father worked away a lot when they were living in the Basque Country. So I think Iñaki, he's 9 or 10 years older, and was like a father figure. And I think that comes across sometimes when you see them interview together, or you see even on the pitch, I suppose. That he is like that father figure. I'm sure Nico's been quoted a number of times of saying how much he looks up looked up to and respects his brother. He did sign a new contract recently, Nico, but there is the clause to get out. So,
it's possible. I mean, we're going to go on to, I guess, talk about the Basque sort of philosophy and the cantera, etc. But I mean, how does a journalist from Wales sort of become an Athletic fan, and to the point that you've written the first book in English on the club?
Yeah, so I've spoken about this a few times. There are a few factors. I mean, the one thing is I was a 90s teenager, so I was a bit of I wasted many days and evenings on Championship Manager.
Okay.
And I used to like going Athletic, and sort of challenge myself to just only have players from the Basque Country.
But they had that rule in the game.
No, they did.
You followed it. Okay.
I think I self-imposed it on myself. Yeah. So I used to like doing that. But then I think Bielsa's team in 2012, who I'm a Manchester United fan. I am a Newport County fan in my Welsh team. Manchester United, my British team. And watching Bielsa's Athletic just utterly outplay and outclass Manchester United in the Europa League in 2012. And the way they did it, it was just unbelievable. And I know Manchester United fans now still think that is the best away performance they've seen at Old Trafford. United fans were clapping Athletic off the pitch. And by all accounts, the fans, I wasn't at the game, unfortunately, but by all accounts, Athletic fans, the away fans were unbelievable. I think it's the largest away following still to this day, maybe? Real Sociedad. I shouldn't mention them, but I'm sure they had a good away following year. So that interests me, Bielsa. And then obviously La Filosofía, like everybody, I know it's a bit of a cliche, that fascinated me, as I think it does everybody from outside Bilbao. And being a Welshman, the Basque Country, I've mentioned this before, it's a small country. We've got similar sized population, similar climate. I mean, I've just got back from Bilbao and it rained for 3 days solid, a bit at home. And then there's the historical repression, cultural repression and repression. Always, we're like the, trying to be beaten down. But I think the Basque Country and Basque people remind me of the Welsh, very friendly, but you don't want to go against them because they're very very stubborn.
That's it. I mean, I guess it's been 40 years without a major trophy. And obviously, you've mentioned that their sort of Basque-only system, their Basque-only philosophy is self-imposed. And there is quite a bit of debate about that. But that overall, overwhelmingly, the fans are still committed to this philosophy, the idea of, producing your own players. Can you talk a little bit about it? I mean, about the actual philosophy and what it means for the society? Because it does seem that it creates nearly a sort of organic link, between the players and the city and Basque society more generally, that in one sense that the team reflects Basque society because they came from it, because they were they were grown within it, they were produced within it, developed within it. And that, in this sense, there's also nearly a sort of, I mean, obviously there are stars, etc. We've talked about the Williams brothers, but that it's no one's bigger than the club, and they tend to turn against people who, you know, they're star players if they decide to they want to move on and leave.
Yeah, well, I think a prime example of that is probably recently is Martinez leaving to go to Barcelona, and it's not turned out well. And I think Athletic Club fans are quite enjoying that.
Okay.
And the one I can think of as well is Fernando Llorente. He left after growing up there. I think that leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. But the philosophy, everybody I spoke to for the book, I didn't come across one person, one fan or one former player who wanted to change. They are like, it's deep rooted. It's as you say, it's sort of it's a reflection of the society, Athletic, just the Basque people, and I don't know. It's sort of, it's hard. I'm not explaining it well here, but it's just there. When you go to Bilbao, they love the club. It's ingrained that the fact that they're a one club city, that philosophy just seeps through into everything. And yeah, they don't want to change. I did speak to Andy Goikoetxea for the book, and he mentioned like tweaking the philosophy.
Yeah,
he said things like using the Basque diaspora, so in South America and so forth. And there are a few people I think agree with that, but then there are the diehard Athletic fans that nope, nothing changes. Only players who were only people from the Basque country can play for Athletic. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think there was a bit of a blip, in the last few years where Athletic weren't doing so well. When I think, and that's when people started talking about it more. But now they've reached a Copa del Rey final again.
Yeah,
they're showing that that sort of shows that they can compete at the highest level with that philosophy. So I was asked this question at my book launch on Friday, what I think. I can't see it changing. I'm not living in Bilbao. I don't hear all these conversations all the time. I can't see it changing in the foreseeable future, but you never know. Things change quickly. But everybody I spoke to at the club, I just think it's ingrained, it's there, and they don't want to change it.
And I mean, it's true. Okay, they haven't really won a major trophy in the last 40 years, but I mean, they have. I mean, the last 5 or 6 years, I mean, they've been to the final of the Copa del Rey. This is their fourth final, I think, is it, in the last 10 years? Or
something like, yeah.
But, yeah.
This is the horrible statistic they've got, that they've lost. They've
been, I know. Yeah, Jesus, yeah.
So I think, although Athletic fans are forever optimistic, that's always lingering there. And, I think Athletic are probably favourites for the final against Mallorca, I would say. Athletic fans are not. They're not expecting it. They're not being overconfident. I think they're just so desperate to end that 40-year trophy drought. And hopefully, I won't mention the barge straight away because I get told off. But, they want to see this La Gabara.
Yeah, you talk about that. It sounds pretty cool. You do talk about that in the book, where their traditional form of celebration when they win a trophy. No one's seen this celebration in 40 years. Because I think you mentioned the English manager was at Howard Kendall in the 80s. He wanted, he had heard about this and really wanted it. So I think, obviously he didn't get to see it either. But their celebration is they go down the river in Bilbao, the Nervión, I think it is, and and on a barge. I mean, the fans are on each bank.
It's become a bit of a mythical thing. I mean, I did a short chapter on it in the book. Everyone goes on about the barge, because when Clemente's won the La Liga and then they won the double the following year in 1984, they went out on this barge, and I think there were estimated about 1 million people on the streets of Bilbao watching them go along in this. It's called La Gabara. And so it's become, but because they haven't used it since, because they haven't won a trophy since, it's become this sort of this mythical thing. But a journalist I spoke to, Beñat Gutierrez, who's a brilliant journalist in Bilbao, he said this almost become, it allows the other teams a bit of banter now. So when Athletic are losing, they're saying, well, where's your barge? Because it's not coming out. But I think everybody's so desperate to see it again and have a party on the streets of Bilbao that, hopefully that does happen next month. I think they've given a date for it, which I think is annoying fans as well, because, superstitious and things like that. But it is unique, as opposed to, obviously, the double-decker bus going through
this.
It's and the photographs of if you look, like, have a little look online, they're pretty amazing.
We say they haven't won a major trophy in 40 years, but they're also a club which has never been relegated from the top division. You know, they're normally at least in competition for a place in Europe. Maybe they're, I think they're fifth this year. I mean, we're talking in a, I guess in a, you know, in a world in which sort of football has been turned into this, you know, speculative business. You know, the sort of era of sort of financial neoliberalism. How is a club and an era of state-owned clubs? I mean, I guess the if there are two clubs that are sort of sticking out this year in Spanish football, the other obviously is Girona, which is the sort of the second tier in the sort of Abu Dhabi franchise to Manchester City. It's not clear, for example, if they are going to get into the Champions League next year or if they can take up their place because of you can't have two clubs with the same ownership owners in the competition. How is it possible in the age of state-backed clubs that this system is sustainable and is viable? I mean, you talk a lot in your book about the academy, you know, the Lezama Academy, where players basically are sort of, you know, brought from 11 onwards, and then also the sort of wider network of sort of feeder clubs which they draw on in the Basque Country.
So is your question how are they managing to stay at the top? It's a bit of a mystery, really, isn't it? When you think about the pop, you know, a very small pool of players to choose from, and as you mentioned, you've got Girona. That's the sort of depressing thing, showing you that money, yeah, you know, having money does help you shoot up the league. And you look at Manchester City. You've got, as you say, Girona, and you've got it closer to home. We got Wrexham at. I'm a Newport County fan, so I'm not a fan of Wrexham getting a lot of money. But yeah, I just the fact that they continue. I mean, they modernise as well. That's the thing with Athletic. Even though they're seen as being a little bit backwards, I suppose, with their philosophy by a lot of people outside of the Basque Country, they are a modern football club. The facility, you know, they got the stadium's fantastic. It's been voted the best stadium in the world and things like that. But they continuously, any money they make from selling the players who do want to leave, they continually update Lezama, the training facilities. And, you know, they got everybody there. I've written about in my book, they've got doctors, they've got teachers. You know, they train these players to prepare for not becoming a professional because such a small percentage of them actually do make it. But I don't know what it is that the Basque have got so many good football players. It's in such a small area.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird things in life, but they really are. And you look at the managers they've got at the moment as well in the Premier League. And with Xabi Alonso doing so brilliantly in Germany, but I think it creates this community and this sort of togetherness, having the Basque-only philosophy. And you think they're doing really well this season as well. I can't get my head around it myself, really, to be honest. But I love speaking to people about it. But I think it's what makes them special, and it's probably one of the reasons why they haven't been relegated. Obviously, Real Madrid and Barcelona are the two biggest clubs in Spain. But I do think the philosophy is one of the reasons why Athletic haven't been relegated, because they just pull together all the time, and you know, nobody's bigger than the club. I know that's a cliche. It's true.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, there's a couple of controversies around this. One is obviously the question of the borders of the Basque Country, in the sense that I think they include the French, the Northern Basque Country or the French Basque Country, and then Navarra, which is a Basque-speaking region, is part of the historic Basque Country. But the way Spain has been divided into autonomous regions, obviously that is divided. So there is, I guess, sort of political, you know, what are the borders of the Basque Country? And obviously around Basque nationalism, if it is linked to this sense, it's nearly a national team within a domestic league. Or, yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, part of that. There are sort of interesting political issues there.
There are a lot of political issues. And, you know, when I was doing my research for the book, you know, it is evident that Athletic bend the rules to some extent, as you mentioned.
Okay.
I think I mentioned Laporte, who now, I forget where he plays now. Did he play? He plays out in Qatar or something like that.
Okay.
He's actually was French, but his grandparents were Basque, and they got him to move to the French Basque Country. So he was formed there in inverted.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the official line, is that they have to be formed within the
Basque. Yeah. And you know, that there are blurred lines there, definitely. And then, as you mentioned, Navarre as well. I'm going to sit on the fence a little bit, you know, when I don't want to get in trouble. But but there's definitely, you know, I can think of one of the books I've read it by Marianne Vaxey, and she says about how they bend, you know, it's certainly bending the rules a little bit, and it can, you know, that sort of comes to ridicule from, you know, people like Phil Ball, who's he's a brilliant journalist. But I interviewed him for the book, and he sort of he does stick the boot in a little bit. Let's say that.
Yeah, so he's a Real Sociedad fan, the sort of main Basque rival, and he says in the book that I guess you can, yeah, it's only possible, this system is only possible in that one club. Obviously, Real Sociedad had a similar system, I think, until the 80s, yeah. At a certain point when Athletic sort of took a lot of their feeder clubs into their network, they decided they couldn't continue, and their first international signing was the Irish striker John Aldridge from Liverpool. And it's funny because I still get asked, you know, when you tell people you're Irish, he's one of the people they bring up, I guess, as, you know, an Irish man who's had an impact in well, the Spanish state, let's say.
Yeah. Well, he also played for Newport County, which is my...
Oh, did he? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's where he made his name, so I'll handle that. But yes, there is that. And I mean, it happened quite recently because there's a team called Antiguoco, and they produce a lot of famous footballers in the past. And they were a feeder club for Real Sociedad, and Athletic have managed to poach them to be their feeder club now.
Okay, yeah.
This goes on all the time. And I you know, Athletic undoubtedly, you know, undeniably are the biggest club in the Basque Country. Real Sociedad won't want to hear that, but they are. So there's no doubt that poaching goes on. But it does go on vice versa as well. There's the smaller clubs like Osasuna and Eibar who suffer probably the most from that. But it's an interesting take. I wanted to interview people from not just Athletic fans, but from outside of, you know, and rival fans to see what their view is, because it is a difficult one, isn't it? If you are poaching, it's frustrating, and you can understand why Real Sociedad dropped their Basque-only philosophy back in the 80s. Although I did find out that they had played some foreign players in the past before that.
Oh, are they? Okay.
But, you know, mainly players of Basque origin. But yeah, it's a difficult one. But I just have to speak to other fans of other clubs. But I know Real Sociedad fans find it a bit sickening.
Okay, yeah. I can understand. But you
did very well at the moment as well, you know.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, you say in your book, though, at the same time, the Basque Derby, it is, if there's a rivalry, it's sort of it's a rivalry between brothers. There's a certain kinship there. At times, that's even sort of, you know, moved as far as sort of solidarity, or, you know, was it in the 70s or 80s where I think Real Sociedad allowed, or I think both teams allowed the other team to win the last day of the season.
Yeah. So there was a story, I forget what the book's called now, but Unzueta is the journalist. But I think Real Sociedad were on the brink of winning the league the year before Athletic won it in 82-83. And Real Sociedad were 2-up, and I think Sarabia for Athletic scored to make it 2-1, and then he grabbed the ball and wanted to equalise. If he did equalise, I think it was Barcelona Madrid would have won the league, and by all accounts, Andoni Goycochea had a little word in his ear. And then
okay.
And they were just passing the ball around it. So they would rather their rival in the Basque Country win far more than they would Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Yeah.
So that, and then vice versa. Then the following year, I think the goalkeeper for Real Sociedad started purposely throwing the ball out to Athletic, hoping they would score.
Yeah.
They won the league, and it worked in both years running. They're both Basque clubs won the league. So that, you know, that's a show of the Basque solidarity, because they're like, I was told not to do, you know, sibling rivalry. People don't like talking about sibling rivalry, but that's what it feels like, where they love each other, but they hate each other at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
But ultimately, they're Basque, and they're, you know, they're on the same side. You know, they are on the same side. But yeah, there is that interesting rivalry. It's a very complicated rivalry.
And I mean, obviously, yeah. One of the events you mention in the book is, was during the transition to democracy in the 70s in Spain, when the Basque flag was still outlawed. I think you could go to jail for, you know, displaying the Basque flag. And the two teams took the decision to walk out onto the pitch. I think it was only a few months after Franco had died with the flag.
Yeah, well, that I think that is sort of etched into Basque folklore and Basque memory, is that the Basque flag, the Icarina, was outlawed by Franco, who thought it was a separatist flag. So it was, I know that ETA used to display it and sometimes attach explosives to it and things like that. It was still outlawed, even though Franco had died the previous year. And I forget the name of the guy whose idea it was. He was a Real Sociedad player. But anyway, he managed to sneak a Icarina flag into the stadium, into Real Sociedad Stadium. And it was carried out by Athletic captain and legend Jose Angel Iribar and the Inexio Cortaberia, the Real Sociedad captain. And it was, it was a historic moment, really, displaying that flag after so many years of it being outlawed and a Basque repression under Franco. So it felt like a big relief and release of emotion. And it's just it's an iconic image of them carrying it onto the pitch at the Real Sociedad Stadium. It's a brilliant historical moment, really.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the repression there. Some of the chapters I found most interesting, which I didn't really know much about, were around the Spanish Civil War, and both in terms of, I guess, the famous Basque Niños, no, like the Basque refugee children who went to Southampton in, I guess, was it 1937? At least you mentioned two. I can't remember the names now, but the two players who end up, one of them becomes the goalkeeper.
Lezama, Raimundo Lezama.
Okay, of course, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And then I'm forgetting the other one myself. I've written a book and I'm forgetting it already.
So that's where you meant you quote our friend who's been on the podcast a few times, Tom Wardle, because they both end up playing for the Southampton youth team as refugees in Southampton.
I've just remembered his name. That was Barinaga. Barinaga.
Okay.
So Lezama was a goalkeeper, and he was, by all accounts, he was a phenomenal goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He played for Athletic for many years and won many trophies. And Barinaga was a striker who ended up actually, so he was playing for South, but he actually ended up going to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And in a turn of events, they played each other in a Copa del Rey final.
Yeah.
Really, a big coincidence. And they were fantastic footballers. And the story goes is that they were just playing in the car park outside Southampton Stadium, and somebody spotted them, took them in, and they were taken on by Southampton, and then went on to have fantastic careers back in the Basque Country in Spain. But I also did an article about some Basque refugee children in my hometown in Caerleon in Wales. And they formed a team called Basque Boys AFC that went on to win, apparently they're amazing. They became known as the Basque Wonder Boys. And once I wrote that article, then lots of families got in touch with me, and we found out that the goalkeeper who played in Caerleon went on to play professionally as well. And he went to play for Cadiz and Atletico Madrid and a few other teams in Spain. So it's really interesting that from those Niños who came over on the Habana in 1937, so many of them were brilliant footballers. There's a few more as well, which I'm forgetting the names off the top of my head, but it's quite unbelievable, really, the amount of those child refugees who went on to have professional football careers. It shows you how important football is, not just a game, but also, as a way of forgetting about atrocities and bringing people together, it's an unbelievable story, really.
I mean, obviously, then it has echoes then with the Williams brothers in that sense as well. What happened? Because they arrive in Southampton in 1937. Did they face repression going back, or did they face? I mean, obviously they're only children, but they are families from Republican or Basque families. Was it easy for them to then become professional players?
Well, I think I'm not an expert in this area really, but they went back eventually because I know that Barinaga and Lezama were offered contracts with Southampton, but I think that naturally they wanted to go back home.
Yeah.
So they went out, and by all accounts, they were playing football within a year of being back there. So I don't know about their families, but they must have been, they must have been allowed back and to get on with their lives. But there must have been that worry the whole time about what happens if I go back. Because I know on the flip side of that, there was the team, the Euskadi team, who toured the world, raising money for the Basque, the Basque refugees and the Basque country in general in the fight against fascism. And many of those footballers who, I think seven of them were Athletic players, many of them never came back from South America because they were so worried about what would happen if they did if they did come back. So many of them stayed in Argentina and played for like River Plate, and a few stayed in Mexico, I believe, as well. Yeah.
And you mentioned in the book, I mean, I guess that it is, I mean, going back to sort of the question of nationalism and the politics of it, is that the club has close links with the Basque Nationalist Party, which is sort of the conservative wing of Basque nationalism. And obviously, yeah, I mean, I guess this is where some of the contradictions come up, because you have the two Basque, like a lot of nationalisms, there are different strains, different factions. You would have a very progressive wing of Basque nationalism, obviously around EH Bildu. What's the Basque Nationalist Party also has had to, in a sense, negotiate big contradictions, in a sense, just as the Catalan nationalists have had to do, in the sense that, I mean, when we talk about the Francoist repression, we're also talking about the Bilbao bourgeoisie, you know, I mean, Iberdrola, companies like that were found, you know, these were key figures in the Francoist regime. You talk a little bit about the politics of Basque nationalism and the club, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult one, because when I was interviewing former players, I was asking about, you know, because there is that, as you mentioned, the PMV are the sort of centre-right party, and you know, what sort of nationalism, you know, nationalism's got many strains, hasn't it? You
exactly.
know,
and
it's a difficult one to process. But when I asked them about it, they didn't want to go into it too deeply, if I'm honest. Oh, and then it was sort of like, oh, when Athletic, the philosophy, when we're all together, it doesn't matter what your politics is, if you're left wing, you're right wing, whatever. We all come together for Athletic and we're all for the same cause. So I didn't get much out of people there. I don't know whether it's a case of they don't want to talk about it, or they're worried about talking about, you know, is this nationalism actually not, you know, a nationalism of a more nefarious type of nationalism? I don't think it is, but there obviously is that element in the past, you know. I'm trying to sit on the fence here a little bit again, because I don't want to get into trouble with anybody. And I'm not there. I don't live there.
Yeah.
What I would say is that it's as you mentioned, Catalan is extremely complicated. Nationalism is, you know, the Basque country, it's undeniable that they do feel separate. They do feel different. But you've got the left-wing nationalists, you know, and you've got the ones who are not so left-wing, shall we say. So that's a bloody difficult question. I mean,
it is a difficult question, because there's no easy answers.
They tended not to talk about.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to get across, is that when I ask people about it, when I am, you know, I mentioned Goyke Chir again. He just said, "Oh, it doesn't matter. We just all support Athletic. We're all for Athletic." But you know, they are undeniably propped up by the PMV, or have been historically. Yeah.
And what were, like, I don't know, what was their relationship with ETA in the 70s and 80s, or into the 90s even? I mean, was it an antagonistic relationship, or how did ETA view the club? Or
from what I know about that, is that ETA tended to stay out of football.
Okay.
They saw it as, I don't know, being a globalised, so they were, you know, a left-wing group. They didn't want to be involved in football. And that sort of changed, I forget which year now, but with Bejante Lizarazu, who was he only played for Athletic for a season. He was a left back. He went to Germany, but he represented the France national side, and that's when ETA became involved there, and they tried to get money out of Lizarazu. But it sort of backfired because people condemned ETA for doing that. So they were never deeply involved in football, as far as my research goes. I'm sure they were, and I'm sure. There's more to it, and there'll be some more experts on me again. But yeah, they tended to try to extort money from businessmen and people like that, as opposed to. But there is the case of Lizarazu, which is a well known case, but it's sort of backfired on them a little bit.
In terms of, I mean, obviously, one of the other things is Bilbao as a city has changed a lot in the last sort of 30 years. You've had a huge sort of regeneration project. Obviously, the most iconic building would be the Guggenheim Museum, etc. But it's sort of gone from a very industrial town to a sort of, you know, very sort of post-industrial, somewhat gentrified city. And I guess part of that was the renovation of the Athletic Stadium, the famous Cathedral. Reading about it in your book, it did remind me nearly of the historic stadium that I knew was like Lansdowne Road in Dublin. It was replaced, the Athletic Stadium. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the new the new stadium in Lansdowne, but the Athletic, the new stadium, it seems to have got like nearly all positive reviews. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Yeah. So the old St Mamés was a historic stadium. It's one of the first stadiums built in, I'll say, Spain, in the Basque Country, and it was, as you mentioned, they called it La Catedral. You know, the cathedral. It was an iconic place. They had a famous archway over the top, which has now been moved to the Lezama training facilities. It's still there. But when they changed it, I mean, it needed, you know, it was an old stadium and it was battered and bruised. And they upgraded to the new St Mamés. And I think fans were worried initially because, as you mentioned, Lansdowne Road, and they can lose atmosphere. I know things like the Emirates State.
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Miss Highbury, you know, a lot. Because, as you say, gentrified, the pitch might not be as close to the old St Mamés. I think the fans were right on top of the pitch. You know, it gave it, you could almost, you know, smell the breath of the fans. And so there is that worry of a change. But I think the new St Mamés, the fans were more than happy. They knew they needed a change. It's still got the same similar atmosphere. I know it's not as close to the pitch as it was, and the seats are a bit more comfortable and things like that. You know, it's a modern, but they kept it in more or less the same position. It's kept it sort of, it's just kept its atmosphere. And I think that's as much to do with the fans as it is to do with the stadium build. But if you go there, it is an unbelievable stadium. And the atmosphere is amazing. It's a bit like the Allianz Arena in Germany, and they got the lights on the outside.
The
big forecourt, which has now got the statue of Erebar outside, and that's where all the fans gather beforehand. It is a unique experience, and again, it's a big thing with these sort of stadiums. It's in the city. It is right at the heart of the city. When you go to the stadiums, which are on the outskirts, and they've got no bars or pubs or buildings around, they've got no soul. And the new St Mamés has still got that. It feels like a proper club. It feels like a proper stadium. Yeah, I don't think they lost anything with it. I'm sure lots of Athletic fans miss the old stadium, as you know, nobody likes change, but I'm pretty sure they're happy with the new stadium, and it's won a few awards since it's been built. Yeah.
Yeah, I also think it's slightly unfortunate that the Spanish FA insist on playing the cup final every year in what was meant to be the Olympic Stadium in Seville. No, it's a pretty bad atmosphere in that stadium. I mean, it's an Athletic stadium. You're miles from the pitch. It's hardly used, I think, during the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's not quite the same, is it? It'd be nice to move it around, maybe. Or
as they did, I don't know. Yeah, they need to find a purpose for this stadium, I think. But it there's not much.
Are they trying to justify it?
Basically, yeah. And where, I guess, yeah, to finish, I mean, where will you be watching the final, and what would it mean to the Athletic fans to break this 40-year dry spell?
Okay, so that's a discussion I've had with my wife this morning, actually.
Okay.
So I don't know, my plans, I would love to be in Sevilla. Whether my friends can, I surely won't be getting the ticket. I'm aware of that. But I would love
to. You must now have connections in the club, having written the first.
Yeah.
Surely that gets you in the door.
Yeah, hell yeah, maybe I could get a box again.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't want to take a ticket off, I don't know, a fan who's been a fan for 40 years.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to do that. That wouldn't sit well with me. Not saying I wouldn't have one, but...
You get over it. You get over your own.
Yeah. I like the thought of going to Sevilla for the atmosphere. I think even if you don't have a ticket, if you're in, you know, it's a great city as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm sure the weather will be better than I've just suffered in Bilbao for the last 3 days. But so hopefully I'm going to get there to Sevilla. If not, maybe possibly Bilbao, so I can get some atmosphere. I think I need to be in one of those cities. And then what would it mean to Athletic fans? Well, I'm pretty certain it would mean everything. They're desperate. They're desperate. There are fans who haven't seen a trophy. Obviously, it's 40 years ago. So they're desperate. And I can see there's hope. I think drawing Mallorca in the final as opposed to Madrid. Although Barcelona were far from fantastic. I haven't watched them on Sunday. Yeah, I just think it would mean the world. I'm sure if Athletic are victorious, there's going to be a lot of tears and a lot of emotion. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. You know, you never know what's going to happen in football. But yeah, it would mean everything. I think Bilbao would be buzzing for the next few years if they were successful in the final.
I think it's 2 weeks, but the final is a week or 2 weeks before the Basque elections, which could also be quite historic. We'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, April will be an interesting month, I think, in Bilbao and the Basque Country.
It certainly will be, yeah. So hopefully I'm around to see what goes on there.
No, well, look, it would be a fairy tale end to the season. It's also a perfect time to bring out the first English language book on the club. No, this in this moment, in that sense.
Yeah, it is, but I'm also all consciously aware now that my book's going to be out of date within a month.
Okay, that's true. Okay, yeah. Second edition. Oh, you're getting second edition coming up.
I've already contacted the publisher and said, "Can I write an afterword, please? Could I quickly the next edition?" So hopefully there could be some future prints in the next few months. So that is something I would want to do because it is exciting to have the first English language book. I mean, that's not the main thing. I wanted to be informative. I wanted to be enjoyable and readable. That's my main thing. It is nice that it's the first English language book, obviously. But hopefully I will be updating it, even though it's going to cost me my time and probably some money. But yeah.
Oh, well, look, it is both enjoyable. It's a very, very enjoyable and readable book. I recommend it to our listeners, anyone who's interested in football. And Chris, thanks a lot for your time.
No, thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to come on the podcast. It's a great podcast. So thanks, Owen. Keep going.
Cheers. Cheers, Chris. Thanks.